2020 committee meeting of the whole meeting of the Glencoe committee of the whole meeting of the Glencoe Park District to order. Lisa, please call the roll and open time.
At 7:02, Member Boren?
Yes.
Member Covey?
Here.
Member Ludden? Member Underdog?
Here.
Chair Brook?
Here. Okay, it's our practice not to address questions at this time. However, we will take comments under advisement. I received one comment. I know, Lisa, you received that one as well. Lisa, could you read any email comments that you received before this meeting?
Yes, I just checked my emails. I received two emails at this time.
Lisa, Josh has joined us.
Hi, Josh. Okay, Josh is here. Okay, the first one is from Mr. Andre Lerman. The To the Park Board, greetings. I would like to thank you and how well you and staff work together so far in your efforts to deal with COVID crisis. Your flexibility, critical thinking, and collaboration have helped the process towards positive outcomes for Park District residents and patients. I know you are about to consider options presented by staff regarding beach and boating operations. And I trust you to continue in the spirit that has worked so far. As you review the options, I do want to encourage all board members to be supportive of what I believe will be a well-thought-out staff recommendation around the contingency plan to reopen beach and boating operations within the federal and state guidelines as they evolve. I know you may think this is not a character recommendation coming from me, but I'm pleased that your staff really has its act together in how it's approaching this crisis. I also encourage the district to work with the Illinois Park District Association to help influence the governor's upcoming Q1 order to differentiate between full access beach facilities like the ones from Edison Lake Forest and including Glencoe from open access beach facilities like those at the Chicago Park District. It will be important for the order to separate those types of facilities in order to recognize the ability of facilities such as Glencoe to adequately control density to use the beach passes to control entry. Thank you for your consideration and good luck to board and staff as you navigate your way through the pandemic. I believe this will be Glencoe Park District's finest hour. Well done, commissioners. And that's Andre Lerman, Eagle Avenue. So we have another email that was sent for Mary. Hi, Lisa. First of all,
sorry, from Heather. Who is it sent from?
Mary. She preferred not her last name or address she read. First of all, thank you for all your hard work you've been doing over the past couple weeks on your front and how well our park district is responding to this crisis. As a stay-at-home mom with three young kids, ages 5, 3, and 1, the building and beach is going to be so crucial for our life.
Hi.
Schools, sports leagues, camps, and staff members, travel, concerts, library, etc. So uncertain at this point. We are definitely hoping that our outdoor areas of Glencoe will remain open for you, specifically the beach, Green Bay Trail, grassy areas of all parks. I think the people in all these areas can easily follow the codes to maintain social distancing guidelines. There could be reminders that trail entrances remain to two parks. The beach could be limited to resident only or a lower number of patrons at that time. And the bathroom could be open for a limited number of people allowed in at a time. I also think that tennis courts could be open again for playing tennis only. In addition to my own family, I have several Glencoe friends, also with young children, whose lives and well-being will be probably affected without riding closure of these areas. If the power is out of control of the park district making decisions, I understand. But I do hope that they does everything in their power to keep as many areas safely open for residents as possible this summer. Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa. Those were both within the guidelines of not being threatening or slanderous. So well within those guidelines. So that was very nice. Thank you, Lisa. Okay, Lisa Shepherd and Carol will lead the discussion on the financial impact update, COVID-19, and we will discuss.
For some reason, I apologize. I got booted off to Zoom. I don't know if it was the number of people, but I am not in on the Zoom image, but I can talk. So, as you saw in your packet, I prepared a cover memo, which kind of highlights Since that time, we now have another month closed on the books, and the governor's stay-at-home order was extended through May 30th, so I thought it would be helpful to provide not only one, but one, two, and three scenarios based on some potential reopening dates for the park district as it relates to our fund balance projection moving forward through the fiscal year. Before I do that, I kind of want to just highlight a couple of the other items from the memo. I included in your packet the latest learn alert from Palermo related to whether workers' comp would be considered if an employee did get the COVID virus, if it would be covered under the workers' comp law. Currently, that is not the case. However, Brett Davis, who is the executive director of Minerva, did say that it would be very likely in some future changes to the legislative process or the executive order. So that might be around the corner for us to consider as we bring employees back to work. As it relates to IMRF retirement, I just wanted to note that our Illinois Municipal Retirement Plan, unlike other pension plans, has been very financially stable over the course of its 80-year history. I attended a webinar, and basically the preliminary rates for 2021 next year could not be impacted by these COVID crisis. It won't be until our 2022 rate. So, as you saw by the information that I presented in the packet to you, IMRF's investment return is actually faring better than the wider market, so I think that's a good sign that they will be able to weather the storm kind of as it looks right now. Real estate tax receipts, I know there were some questions on whether Cook County would delay the second installment. We typically get tax bills sent out in July, late June, for payment on August 1st. At this time, there is no discussion by Cook County. I know there's a couple of downstate counties that have discussed that possibility. They do have different timelines related to when their second installment is due. Not sure if that's really what comes into play for them. But I did, in the scenarios that I use an 80% collection rate for our second installment. And when I went back, I remembered back in 2008, right around the recession, that the second installment was delayed until December 1, I believe, which did create some financial issues for our bond payment. When I looked into that, the reason behind that wasn't necessarily the recession. It was a computer glitch by the county at that time, which delayed the actual processing of the second installment bill. But as you know, there was a recession that hit at that same time, and when I looked at the collection percentages related to that time, which is the most similar scenario. I realize we're in a pandemic and it's different, but the closest scenario I had, my collection rates were still about 97.5%. But for the purposes of the scenarios that I included in your packet, I used an 80% collection rate. And again, know that we already collected the first installment in February and March. I've also included in your packet some of the park maintenance cost reductions that Chris Liner, as our director of parks, has submitted for April and May. You see a net savings of contractual costs, primarily the mowing and horticultural in the village for about $60,000 in savings. Also gave you a breakdown of the program and rental refunds that we have issued since the closure of March 13th. So we kind of realized the extension was going longer, became and to process those refunds, putting it either back on a household account or to actually pay if people requested that in particular. Also note that we did not bill for our building programs, which is basically ELC, daycare, fitness, and kids club for April, and that was about $200,000 in revenue. And we also will not bill for May as well for those programs. GJK, on the other hand, did bill for their May 1. They bill in four installments for their next year's preschool. This is the second of fourth installments, and they will bill in June and July. The total amount that we billed to them was a little over $135,000, of which we retained a little over $33,000. So if I could go right into the scenarios, and then I'll open it up for any questions from you. Scenario one, and this is the one that I'll really kind of highlight with reopening on June 1. The other two scenarios, so foreclosure through June 30th, reopening July 1. And the third scenario is closure through August 31st, basically reopening on September 1, meaning no summer camps whatsoever. And each discussion will be determined later on in this meeting. So the first scenario, again, is through May 31st, the end of this month. You see real estate taxes collected at 80% in July and August. If, again, even if we go up to 90%, that could be an additional $250,000 that's not reflected in this scenario. You see in daycare, starting in the month of May, emergency daycare of $30,000. As you know, we opened our new emergency daycare program yesterday, and have had families that are participating, and we expect to see some revenue coming in for that. Otherwise, we're expecting that when daycare opens up, we'd be probably at 75% of the capacity, thus the revenue starting at $105,000 in June. GJK preschool camp in enrichment, you see in March, we actually paid out or received the first installment. I just also want to note that I have highlighted separately below as an expense the 75% payout. Those revenues go 75% to GJK and we retain 25%. You see for the beach and boating revenues in the first 3 months there, you've actually collected that money for both. The boat rental spaces, and I show starting in June 50% revenues coming in for beach. Again, that's going to be dependent on the discussion tonight. You don't see any revenues really. I want to point out that for other camp programs, other rec programs, of that $25,000, I'm happy to report that nearly $19,000 of that has been from parent contributions for daycare teachers, determined later, and that money continues to come in. For camp, you see the 50% refund of the revenues that we have collected today, that negative $385,000 in May. That's assuming that half of the people would opt out of camp, even if it was offered, starting in June, and again, that's all to be determined by the governor and the next information that we receive from them. See if there's anything else. You can see program wages are identified as regular wages for full-time and part-time staff are identified as actual both for March and April, and projecting out for May for the rest of this month as well. Salaries and benefits are included in there. Throughout the year, we have not made a decision yet, and won't until more information is known for whether we're opening June 1 or not. But really what it comes down to, and it's the highlight of, number one, there's $1.5 million that we will transfer, as expected, from last year's fund balance overage of the guideline of 50% into Fund 69. That is reflected, actually, in all three of these scenarios. And the highlighted fund balance is at the end of the fiscal year, February 2021. Even with this scenario one, we're still over 58% projected fund balance at the end of the fiscal year. So that's meeting the 50% guideline for the district fund balance policy. And again, it's kind of a sign of what, again, bond rating agencies, when they determine AAA bond rating agencies, that's something that they look at, is the fund balance level. So I'm happy to report that even with the closure of the first 3 months, if that's what it is, it would still be at that level. Moving forward in scenario two, the percentages just change a little bit, assuming that if we open July 1, again, we have more people canceling from camp, and basically that refund amount in May 2020 would be $580,000 of the money that we've collected. There would be fewer pass sales should we decide to do that as far as the beach and boating revenue. And still, at the end of scenario two, you still see where it's over 56% that we would project for that scenario. Scenario three just gives another look at it, where we would have no camp, meaning all that money would be refunded. It's obviously a bigger impact. We would have emergency daycare for the 4 months, assuming that we could get our license renewed after our first 30-day license, so at least we're bringing in some revenue. And that typically fall programs would start out probably 75% of what we would anticipate based on prior years, but moving forward with both the revenue projections and expense projections. Again, at the end of that, we'd still be looking at being over the 50% side. So in all different scenarios, we're still over the 50% guideline, and we're still able to do the $1.5 million fund reserve into Fund 69. Any potential fund balance reserve transfer that typically we would do in July, I would obviously recommend that we wait until more information is known as disclosure. And but that is something that I could still look to do at the end of the fiscal year.
Okay. Lisa, do you have something to add?
No. Any questions? We'll open up the floor to answer any questions.
Where is it reflected, our virtual programs? Is that in other rec programs for April?
Yes. Also, it could be, again, if people are using some of the refund that they had on their credit, it would show in that area as well. So, yeah, the virtual programming is not bringing in a whole lot of money, but it is bringing in money.
Is that also what's reflected in ELC? Is that ELC virtual for April?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay, so that makes sense. So then you're just projecting until September. No charges there.
And you're back with us, Carol.
I am. I'm back in.
Michael, did you have something?
Hi, Carol.
Michael.
Can you just, one easy question, I'm sure you're going to know this off the top of your head. What's with the sudden burst in expenditures for salaries and wages in July 2020? Every scenario goes up to 340.
There's three payrolls in July. As in the narrative, there's three payrolls in July and there's three in January.
Okay.
You guys do every 2 weeks?
Yeah, or bi-weekly, so we have 26 pay periods a year.
Man, why in heaven's name do you do 26 pay periods a year?
Okay. I don't know. All right.
I thought most did first and 15th, just specifically for these reasons, but okay.
Is there a reason utilities are so low in March, and then they're pretty much, not that much lower than when we're not running in April and May?
Yeah,
we didn't put the lights on, the children's circle unit.
Typically in March, we're paying accrued payables, so you have the energy you use in February, you're billed in March, but they're accrued back to last fiscal year. So typically a lot of those payments we pay in March, they're accrued back to the last fiscal year. So we're really paying in April, March's bills.
Dudley?
Carol, I've got a quick question. First of all, thank you very much for the different scenarios. I really appreciate your efforts in that area. Can you refresh my memory as to how we're dealing with independent contractors?
Independent contractors are not being paid at all. We're not conducting the program, and they are not paid.
Okay.
They are doing a virtual program. They're paid that percentage of the income we're bringing in for virtual programs, but if they're not doing any virtual programs, they're not being paid.
But contractors like Sarah Hall, who are doing virtual programming, they're still getting
Great. Thank you.
I didn't quite understand, Carol, the documentation that you provided at the end that sort of intimated perhaps there's an independent contractor they may be able to apply for. Well, you take it away, Carol.
Employment? Yeah. Actually, there is some, as part of the CARES Act, they extended who actually can apply, an independent contractor. Now, if they're properly identified per the IRS regulations as an independent contractor, they likely won't get it. If they have been misidentified as an independent contractor, but they really have been employees, then it has to go back to control of schedule. There's like 20 criteria that the IRS kind of takes into consideration. So independent contractors, we make a big deal about when they come on, making sure that we look through that criteria of whether they're independent contractors or employees. And if they're properly classified as independent contractors, likely they will not be able to get that.
Okay. And just real quickly on the real estate, you've given a very conservative estimate of 80%, which is, it was great, but it's very interesting that in the recession it was 97.5%. Is that because you're accounting for capturing that money when those houses sold, you know, presuming people who weren't able to deal with it moved and then captured the money then? And how do you account for that?
It's actually not from the people moving, it's from people that perhaps don't use an escrow account for the payment of their taxes. And so when it comes down to it, they have lost their job and they can't pay it, they're not able to pay it.
Right, but so, we get the money when the house is sold, then we get the money, right? Because it can't settle until back taxes are paid. So I'm just curious about how the money coming in after the fact, how you account for that.
It's accounted for in that current fiscal year. So if we eventually receive it,
okay,
then it's recorded in that current fiscal year that we receive it if it's related to the prior year.
Okay. So that 97.5 could have been money captured a year later, 2 years later.
Actually, the year of the financial audit that I looked at did show that for that year. So it could have been down the road, even went up to 100% based on just collection in the
right
years after.
Right. Thank you. Josh, you must have something.
Are you muted?
Unmute.
Josh, you're muted.
You're all better off that way. I am also impressed with the scenarios and grateful that Carol and her team created them, and I'm happy with them. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions?
I have a question. So you provided a lot of information on unemployment. My question is, if you just do a pay cut, are employees able to collect unemployment for that?
I don't know if we want to get into the discussion. I believe they are, but if we decide to, if we don't, we may have made any discussion, but the question is, if we decide to say someone who normally works 20 hours gets 10, they would be able to file for the differential. Yeah.
Are we gonna,
but they are, but at that point, they've cut ties with employment, and so the benefits that they, you know, normally accrue, I think, like pension or anything like that, you know, and any guarantee of a job coming back is not non-existent, right? You don't once you're unemployed and you don't necessarily get the right to come back.
Well, I think it's
a plan saying, like, company gives, like my company gave a pay cut, I'm still employed, mm-hmm, I don't collect, but I don't know if that would activate our unemployment responsibility. That's what I'm asking.
You have to leave your job to get unemployment benefits.
No, you do not. If you get furloughed, meaning there is an intent for you to come back, you get unemployment.
If you cut people's hours and they voluntarily say, you know, if you cut hours, they can keep their job at the reduced hours and collect unemployment.
Yeah, if there's a differential in their base pay when they go collect unemployment and they're making more in base wages than they were last year when they look at from January 1 to December 31st, 2019, that's how they take their wage information. If there's a differential and they say, I need that money, they can claim unemployment.
Okay, so
and they're still employed by the Park District for the, if you cut hours by 10%, you were 20 hours a week, you're still paying them for 18 hours and they're going to unemployment for the differential?
Again, it depends on if we're furloughing, laying off, or discharging them. And I think there needs to be a more discussion about that when we go there. We could talk about this for a while tonight, but I think we have a long meeting. I don't want to say something that's
incorrect. No, we can talk about it later, but that was not my impression. My impression was if the employee says they don't want to take that pay cut, they can go to the unemployment line. But then where you don't have to pay them the 18 hours, they just take their unemployment. So we can chat later.
I guess my question is, if we aren't able to operate in option one or option two, when are we going to discuss any kind of changes we may make because of that?
Well, we'll discuss that at a later date, but in all three scenarios, it shows that we're able to operate at our current level, actually, probably even until January, and still have about a 40% fund balance. So we're in a very strong financial position. Not that we're
understood,
going to do that.
But it's still many months. If we're in that option three, I think we need to at some point discuss.
Absolutely. I mean, I think when the board decides what happens after May 31st, you've given the authorization to pay staff. We well know that if summer camp is canceled moving forward, we have to discuss that. So I think we're kind of probably going to wait for the next directive from the governor later this month before we can do that. We don't have any details to really go into that deep dive into that discussion. We plan to do that, but that wasn't the subject of IT.
So expect a special meeting. Let's just schedule a special meeting once.
That would actually be another meeting to discuss that more. That's a big discussion.
All right.
Unfortunately, today's meeting provided really no kind of date, so it's not like that helped you guys.
We'll definitely bring it. We're looking at all scenarios, and that's a much longer discussion because it would be if patients of service that would be able to buy the community. So I think what I've tried to do with scenarios pretty well is to see even in different scenarios that financially I think that you can see that we're in a strong financial position related to perhaps other park districts who have a lot more facilities that they're running, and the fact that by the size of our smallness, that kind of helps us, and our very prudent financial responsibilities that we've held in becoming a AAA rated agency to be confident that we are strong. So
very good. Any other comments or questions on this portion of the meeting? All righty. So next up, Lisa Shepherd, Bobby Collins, Matt Walker will lead the discussion on the boating and swimming beach operations.
Okay. I just wanted to preface this whole discussion that these are just ideas, and we want to give you a couple scenarios to give you things to think about so we can start planning for the future. One thing we do know right now is that the latest governor's
proclamation.
What's that? I muted yourself. I am muted. Just a second. I never turned on the audio, so that's not me. Okay, anyways, that swimming is currently not allowed until the end of May at any swimming facility. So once you put that out, we go through our different scenarios, and that's what we're working with right now, is that no swimming is allowed at beaches or aquatic facilities. And we don't know if that order will be extended or not. We have no indication from today's information that was given out. So what we want to talk about is some different scenarios that we're going to be talking about with the beach. So first we're going to go over the boating beach, because that's some direction we did get from the governor's office. So per the executive order, boating is allowed with no more than two individuals. In the news conference, he said fishing. We later clarified with the governor's office that any kind of boating is allowed, but no more than two people. So that was really good news for us with the Glencoe Boating Beach. So our plan of action is to open the boating beach under the tour lunch restrictions with modification. So if we really can't open the facility, so the boating facility would be allowed, but we'll be able to allow boating be able to open the classroom. So I'm going to throw it over to Bobby and Matt to discuss some of the modifications that we were recommending for the voting meeting.
Yeah, absolutely. So obviously these are exceptional times, and I don't think you'd see anything we'd be looking at in ordinary times, but given the circumstances, some of the modifications we'd be discussing looking at are to continue to follow the shelter-in-place order and the social distancing mandate. We are discussing about having no voter assistance on the water. What that would mean would be we would not launch Glencoe Park District vessels to go and assist voters with riding a capsized vessel or helping voters out, which clearly is challenging for voters, but with protecting our staff and maintaining social distancing and allowing us to wear PPE, we don't think in this current situation with the current restrictions on us, we can do that successfully. So we would be offering voter surveillance from the chair only. What that would look like is we would look at it on the water, and if we see somebody in distress, we would call the Coast Guard. That's the level of surveillance we would be able to provide. We would also have limited voter assistance to get folks to the water's edge to ensure that there's limited contact with voters. We know we have some of our demographic challenge with getting their boats down to the water due to the weight and size of them. So we would look to work with them to get the boats down to the water's edge and potentially bring them back up at the end of the day without being in contact. Voters would not be able to get access inside of the boathouse other than the restroom. So we would leave the restrooms open. And we would follow the DCEO restroom standards, which were published recently for golf courses. We have already installed locks on the bathroom doors so people can't get into the boathouse from the bathroom, as they did before. We're installing claw hooks on the doors to minimize hand contact with the handles. The bathrooms would get cleaned at least twice a day. We would add additional signage, including use drone rinse and wash hands after use. And we are in the process of also installing auto flushers on all of the urinals. We would continue to advise, which we already do, that voters use a VHF radio and have it on them at all times so that they too can contact the Coast Guard in an emergency. We would also look to create a drop-off schedule for voters delivering boats to the beach for the season, kayaks and paddle boards. And that would be done through that. We would also look to not do any boat rentals, kayak rentals, or paddleboard rentals this summer so that we would not put people in contact with vessels or equipment that's being used by other people, and also try to maintain social distancing. Thankfully, we would not do any regattas or club socials or barbecues until the restrictions are reduced or we get more guidance on that. But given the social distancing mandate, those would not be done in the current environment. We would not recommend changing any of the facility hours. Does anybody have any questions on any of those modifications? Again, that's after a significant amount of discussion internally. I'm looking at our operation and we realize that none of these are great options, but they're probably the least bad options.
I have a quick question, Bobby. Will you narrow the criteria for boats can't go out, like the black flag? I assume black flag means nobody goes out. Will you narrow that band just to reduce the potential for saves?
We would look to do that. We are very cautious anyway. We would look to definitely continue to use the flag system, and as Matt always does, advise people of what the weather's looking like and advise against going out to people. So I will say our voters are very good about monitoring the weather and knowing their limits, because everybody has matured with their sailing experience. They've learned that they're not invincible, but we would definitely look to do that.
And how many saves did your staff, I mean, off the top of your head, Bobby, I apologize. You know, what's an average number of times your staff goes out to help rescue somebody who needs help?
I would say half dozen where the Coast Guard would have had to be involved if we weren't there.
Okay. Thank you. And voters lose, real quickly, voters lose their priority position if they don't buy this a spot this summer, correct?
Correct, and I think you probably have some voters on here looking for clarity on what nobody knows. I think we'll probably have a surge in people signing up once they realize the season, there is going to be some voting of some sort for the going forward. So we are looking at, we're at 55% of the vote towards revenue as of today.
Sorry, Bobby, I didn't understand that entirely. If someone's been voting with us for 20 years and they don't pay this year because of whatever reason associated with COVID, I presume, they would lose their spot in, they fall to the bottom of the line in 2021?
Yeah, so some people, if they would get spots back if there is spots available next year. The real challenge comes with sand spots, because to be brutally honest, we don't have enough sand spots for all the boats this year with the water level.
How many spots do we have?
What's that?
How many spots do we have?
We're probably three or four spots short of where we need to be, but we have at least about 15 to 20 boats that haven't signed up. We do know that there is some boaters who have sold boats and who have taken them off the beach, which has helped. So to answer your question, Michael, it's more that they would get a spot back if there was a spot available. We can't guarantee what the water level. That's more the concern rather than them not paying.
Is there a priority for residents, Bobby, in this mix?
There is in the wait list a priority for residents. They get priority on the wait list.
I assume the majority are residents, no?
Over 60% are residents, yes.
I have a question. I'm a proxy for Tom Sparks, by the way. He's traveling back from Florida. I'm sure some of you know him. The question I was going to ask is, the guidelines that you just laid out for the sailing beach and for the no rescue, is that hard and fast, or is that the suggestion at the moment?
Now, I could be wrong, and I apologize, and I don't know your name, but
he unmuted himself.
This is a meeting where you're able to submit emails ahead of time, but the meeting as a public meeting is not open to questions. It's really a working meeting among the board with input from the staff. And if you just, the really good questions and legitimate questions, if you just jot them down and send them off in an email, you will get one of our staff. Bobby would be a good person. Matt, Lisa, copy all of them. They will get back to you. They tend to be very, very quick with their response. So I would
Understood.
Ask you to do that.
Understood. Apologies. I didn't know.
Oh, that's perfectly fine. Thank you. Josh Lutton, I can't imagine you don't have something to say given how often you use the boating beach. Do you have any thoughts on this?
It's thoughtful. I'm trying to wrap my head around what it means to provide no assistance. So I don't have an answer to that. Maybe Bobby or Matt could address that in a little more detail. My second question would be around, have you discussed this with the Coast Guard?
So we are one of the only boat beaches that actually provide voter assistance. It's kind of, a lot of them have gone away from it due to risk management. We would definitely discuss it with the Coast Guard, and we Matt and I and our administrative team would be discussing this for probably a month at this point. And it pains us to even have this discussion, because it's not ideal. So we totally understand this is not a perfect situation at all. It all comes back to, can we protect our staff? And the answer we keep coming up to is, we don't believe we can in the current circumstances.
Bobby, you kind of raised this in your response. So in normal times, with the neighboring beaches, you're saying that we're one of the only ones that provides assistance in normal times anyway. Is that correct?
Correct.
And did we talk, and I'm assuming that you talked to Bederma, or is this a Bederma issue because other municipalities don't provide that?
It's about eliminating the contact for the employee. So it's about eliminating the service where they would come in contact. I think it's a little more, it's more difficult for a boat guard who's driving a power boat and pulling somebody out of the water to have effective PPE than a cashier who's behind a plexiglass screen who's also wearing a mask and gloves. It will also go to the lifeguard situation is, you know, even in an emergency room, the doctors are wearing PPE. Our staff would not be able to have PPE on them that would help them if they were to encounter somebody with a virus.
And Stephanie, to answer your question, we have put this mask for dermal, but if not ideal, we would be within our right to do so. As long as we made it very clear to everybody this is the level of service that we would be providing.
But let's say we get a cure and we get to open up immediately, we would not recommend then keeping with these restrictions, these modifications. We would like to go back to more full service, which is appropriate for the circumstances of the time. These are temporary in nature. We believe in Horizon.
And if we did go back to full service, we would presume to fill all the spots so that in terms of the financials, we would be in a better position to provide that kind of service, correct?
Well, I don't know if we would. If it happens this season and we're able to provide more full service, I don't know if we would build these throughout the season. So that's a risk we take.
Well, with less boats, we're going to need less boat guards. So I think that the boat guard expenses will go down if we less boats. So we will monitor expenses as you know. We always do that, depending on what the revenue comes in. We're going to manage the levels of service with boat guards based on revenue.
Bobby, I have a question.
Go ahead, Dudley.
Okay. I have a question. Bobby, are we going to have the complete season? Is that the idea, starting in just a few days, I guess, all the way through October?
Yes. So we will start on the 9th, which is Saturday. We go weekends until mid-June. And then we go full-time starting in June. And then we go through the beginning of October.
Okay.
So we're not recommending any modifications to hours or our days of operation.
Thank you.
It appears that most of the years since you've come back to work for the Park District, the spring has been extremely cold. What do you have to say for yourself?
Yeah, Bobby.
But we've had fantastic Indian summers. A lot of them. Summers have given us great sailing weather, great morning weather, great beach weather. Hopefully that happens this year. You know, the best time to sail in Chicago is the fall, so we're hoping the weather for the next 2 weeks, but I don't think it's above 60.
This year in particular, we'll take it.
Yeah.
All right, if there's nothing more about boating, we can move on to swimming. The swimming beach or the sunbathing beach?
All right, so now we're going to go to the swimming beach. As I said, it's only 31st, there's no swimming allowed, but after that day, we do not know, so we won't have to bump into some swimming for a while. Our objective right now for the swimming beach is to manage a crowd, facilitate social safety, minimize that exposure and support contact tracing. That's a big part of stopping the spread of the virus. So before we really go on, when we go through this whole report, there's two questions we want you to consider. Are you okay with selling beach passes and putting it not allowed for a partial, you know, the beginning of the season would be, or a full season based on executive order? So that's our first question to you before we move on to our different scenarios is, are you okay with that? Yes or no? We have different scenarios that we kind of laid out. So if you're not, staff believes it's going to be really hard to maintain order down the beach, no groups gathering, social distancing, things of that matter. It would be almost impossible to manage those crowds with just the current system we're doing now, which is park ambassadors. We've noticed there's a little shift in attitude. This past weekend with the warm weather, which at least we believe it might be hard to manage. Therefore, if we don't sell beach passes,
we might be forced to close the beach and test off any use for anybody. So that's the scenario we'll probably look at for that. If you are okay with selling beach passes and still going to be allowed, we're recommending that we begin that May 22nd, and that date is up for discussion. And allow access to beach only with the purchase of a season pass, except for we would allow unrestricted free use of the beach for walking or running from sunrise to 9 a.m. Then we would pretty much clear off the beach, and then we would do beach pass holders only from 9 a.m. to sunset. So we would actually extend our hours to maintain that social gathering on the beach at that time. So my question to you is, if you'd like us to go over the scenario how that would work, but what's your feeling on selling beach passes if you never have water access?
Personally, I don't have a problem with it as long as we're making clear that we will only provide swimming access if the state border allows it and we think it's safe. And there's no guarantees of either.
I agree.
Yeah, would have to be very, very clear. I could just imagine a family there with small children and they'll want to run right to the water.
Yeah, we can manage that part because we've managed that before.
We'd have to cut off the water.
We have to cut off the water. You have water monitors and stuff. Michael, you weigh in?
What are the odds of this happening? Has Pritzker made any, have there been any discussions about whether the water is going to be open or not? Or
no,
swivel?
He's
going to stop.
Any indication at all? They just published a new one today, Restore Illinois, and did not talk about water at all, either for swimming pools or beaches. We have to talk at all. So
yeah.
Right now, all the order includes no swimming.
I'm also fine with it. There are some ways that we probably want to think about how we communicate it, like Dudley and Josh said. But I'm fine with it. In fact, I almost would think about selling, calling it a different name, calling it a beach access pass and not like a swim pass, just to be ultimately extremely clear on what it is.
Right now, beach passes—they're not called
sand access pass.
I like beach access pass.
I like that. That's good. That's good.
Yeah, I like
it. To make it really clear, but
yeah,
it's a suggestion. You guys can figure that one out.
It will work out all the details. We know that definitely there will be a marketing shift with this, and we're prepared to do that. So our staff will take care of those details about marketing. Consider name changes. We'll take that under advisement, and we'll work on that with our marketing team immediately.
Lisa,
okay.
I have a question. Is there any consideration to setting a finite number of passes that you will sell, or will it be as many residents as want to buy a pass can buy it, and then if it gets to be too many, I mean, I don't know, what are the numbers that you're looking at? Are you considering that at all, or at just selling as many passes as people care to purchase before, what's the date, what's the last date, May 31?
We can see about selling these passes throughout the summer. Yeah, we were talking about a number of these passes. Do you remember what that we say it was like 4,000 each individual beach passes?
Yeah, exactly. Around 4,000 is the target. So what I did was Matt and I worked on what the usable square footage is for each attendees. And we calculated a 65,000 usable square feet of beach for users. What we did was we took 10 by 10, gave everybody 10 foot by 10 foot, 100 square feet, which gives you 650 maximum capacity. And then we said, for safety purposes, divide it in half. So we are comfortable having 300, 325 people at the beach. So we know we're going to have to use a clicker. We know we're going to have to monitor the number of people. We know we're going to have to potentially say to people, you may have to wait 10 minutes until our one up, one down, and manage that. That's why we're comfortable asking for pass holders only and not doing daily admissions. We don't think we can manage it successfully if we include daily admissions.
how is this possible if we're still under the order of, like even he said today, you can only gather with 10 or less and then 50 or less? How is this possible when phase four is 50 or less, even with social distancing? This seems like this is not allowed.
Stephanie, what we can do is we can mandate there's no more than 6 people in a group and that they socially distance on the beach. That's the 325 mats we let out on the beach every day. So part of our attendance duties will be to make sure that people are socially distancing. Their groups of people will be 6 feet away from each other.
But doesn't that still, I don't get how you can still do that when it's a gathering of 50 is the maximum and we're going to be at 350. I mean, we're still gathered in the same place.
It's actually classified as a park. So as long as they're socially distancing from the south, so if people can go into the park, they just can't be on top of each other. So that's why we have the ability to limit that. If we just had a free fall, everybody go down there, we'd be people down there. So we feel if we limit the amount of people down there every day and then have the attendants make sure that they're socially distancing from other groups and that we mandate there's only 6 people in a group, and that 6 people would be immediate family members as much as we can tell. We would tell people to get over your neighbors out with you, or if your group that you're sheltering in place with them, be allowed to come down.
I guess I have several interrelated questions. One of my questions, well, I think you just confirmed it's your maybe plan is too strong a word, but your thought is that we would not offer daily access at all?
Correct.
Is that
correct? There's a number of reasons why. Number one is that...
Let me just get out all the questions, Lisa, and then you can answer.
Okay.
I guess this isn't a question, it's more of a statement, but I'm worried that if a resident in particular went to the beach on a Saturday and was told you can't have access at all, that you might have a near riot on your hands. And the second question and third comment is, have you considered like splitting the season in half or in thirds? And saying, you know, we're having this special pass through June, 4th of July or something, and then we're going to see if we can go back to the regular system after the 4th of July or something.
Okay. So we are recommending that we allow access to be from sunrise until 9 a.m. without a beach pass. The residents, a lot of residents use it for exercise, walking, and stuff. We're recommending still allowing that. And we believe that it's mostly medical families that use it during those hours, medical outlying. And then after that, we do passes. There may be times that we have to serve residents or any season pass holder away based on the occupancy. That happens in aquatic facilities all the time. You reach your bather low capacity and people have to return. That may happen in the summer, to be honest with you. Depending on a 100-degree day and everybody comes down, all 4,000 individual pass holders come. It's very rare that happens, but it happens.
We did not even
venture down the splitting the season to half or a third. We went with the assumption of a season pass to use all summer.
It's challenging to get people to sign up for the pass in the first instance, but
yeah.
It's definitely looking to see for the modification that might work.
It's hard to do that, yeah. Yes.
Josh, were you asking about the season pass in thirds, or were you asking about the policies for residents, non-residents to be cut into thirds?
Well, I was just trying to understand if there was a way to make it less draconian or less, like maybe it seemed, a draconian policy may seem reasonable when the state is pretty locked down, but if things are partially open, it may seem excessive, or residents may get more angry. I think people may be angry anyway. I suppose what maybe Michael you're suggesting, or Bobby maybe you were, is that, or Lisa it could have been you, that we could decide on July 4th that okay, now we're offering daily passes.
Exactly. We would open the season, and if things drastically, the state would get drastically changed, so maybe the social distance mandate, you're allowed to be able to allow more people to be.
The one problem with that is people will be convinced to buy a pass, because that's the only way they'll have beach access, only to discover a month in that you could actually buy a day pass. So I think somehow in the way we market this, which has to be really thorough, so that nobody can say, I didn't know I had to buy a pass. We have to just be really, really careful about how we frame what it is they're buying a pass for. That it could mean that they may not have access to the water. It might mean that as the season progresses and restrictions are lifted, that passes will be available, but it may not. I mean, I don't know. I would be convinced to buy a pass if I did not think I could get a day pass to go when the weather was perfect and my kids felt like going. I would be less convinced if I thought it would open up later on. I don't know.
We would give that pass holder the option to buy a guest pass and guest passes.
Yeah.
So that will help a small bit. And I will echo what everybody has said about the communication part. It's probably the most important part. Whatever is decided, that is probably the most important part for successful execution of whatever we're planning.
Yeah.
There's other restrictions we have. There would be no group exercise down there. There'd be no camp groups allowed. There's no larger groups. No sun shelter at first rentals. We'll be putting those other things in place also. We're also suggesting that that adults, our children under 12 must be accompanied by adults in this particular instance, so that they can control the social mandate part of it.
One other idea, maybe you have considered it already, but consider offering daily passes up to X, like 50 or whatever number you feel is appropriate. Maybe then, like, if it's kind of a, you know, mediocre day and Glenville resident wants to, or any resident, you know, anybody wants to go to the beach and it's not particularly full, they can get in. But if it's 96 degrees and everybody wants to go to the beach, you can say, sorry, we sold out of the 50, you know, we're at our occupancy limit, you can't come in. And then you got a good reason then, because you can only have so many people down there safely.
With that, first of all, we're trying to distance our cashiers from people coming down, so social distancing that also. So it's possible that we would not be able to accept cash, we'd only be able to do credit cards. Our system does not allow for purchasing daily passes online right now. We could buy that
ticket,
so we could get it possible, we'd have to upgrade that module. So
it would take half of that.
I have a fair amount of thoughts on this. I can tell you that I would probably be pretty tough to convince me that that we don't sell day passes. I think you're setting ourselves up for a little bit of a challenge with forcing Glencoe residents to pay for a season pass to access the beach. And I do think there's ways. Josh had some creative ways. I think I'm going to push the board. I'm going to push the staff to come up with creative ways to sell day passes there, because I do think that you will have. It could be a mutiny if we turn away a resident saying you don't even have an option to access this beach unless you're going to buy a season pass. That to me is almost a non-starter. That being said. You know, there are ways to do it. I'm not going to spend, you know, too much time on talking about the various ways, because there's probably dozens and dozens of ways to implement this safely. But I do think, strongly that not giving residents a day pass is not in our best interest. People want to access the beach. They don't want to spend $100 or $150 to access it twice. And I feel for individuals like that. Keep in mind, I've always bought a pass since I was here for the past 7 years. Before I was on the board, I always bought a pass, and I used it X amount of times, and I loved it. But there are plenty of people that want to use it two or three times a year, and I think that's not the right way to do it. Now, if we want to think about options, we could tell people that you can buy day passes now, and those day passes now, you're as if you're a season pass holder, but if you don't use them, you can return up to 50% of them or something like that. So I think there are options out there. I just think that it'd be really tough to stop people from accessing day passes.
The one thing I might suggest, and I hear what you're saying, but I think we're trying to control the number of people, and if you could picture someone who's purchased a summer's pass and they get to the beach and the day passers have taken up the spots and you have to go home, I think it devalues the day pass if what we're trying to do is create control when we know there is going to be excess demand over supply of spots. So I think it's a dicey thing. I hear you saying people are going to be upset, but I think they'd be less upset if they knew from the outset this is a pass, beach pass summer.
Yeah, and the problem with that, though, Lisa, is that people, I think we could be creative, and as I said, I wasn't going to go into details here, but I'll give you two solutions. Bobby, you said the beach could probably hold, what, 350? Is that what you said?
325.
For the sake of an argument, let's just call this 300. The beach is going to hold 300. If you are a season pass holder, you get in so long as there are less than 300 people there. Period, right? You are the first in the waiting list line. If there are 300 people there and there are 10 people who want to buy day passes and you show up, two people come up from the beach, you and your spouse are the first two down there because you've got the season pass holder. So there are ways, Lisa, to do this. It is complicated.
And it creates a log jam of people at the midpoint in line, which I'm also concerned about.
You're going to have that log jam anyway if Bobby's going to do first in, first out, because you may sell 700 season passes and you can only hold 325 and you got 500 there. So the log jam will be created anyway. If you're going to do a first in, first out, the log jam is going to be created no matter what. If you're saying that the way to avoid the logjam is to sell only season passes, I think that's a really tough proposition to the residents who, no matter what, are going to see it, that I pay for this beach. Whether or not it's subsidized or fully allocated, residents are going to see it, I pay for the beach. And I'm not even allowed to access it. That's a tough thing to put out there.
One of the reasons I also wanted to do season passes is so we can track who is coming to the beach. And that's just for contact tracing, so that we know if so someone does pause and say I was at the beach, I was just diagnosed with COVID-19, now we have a whole database with the beach and we can notify those individuals that someone's positive at the beach. I mean, that's one benefit of that. I also want to make it known that we have to sell non-resident passes. So we can't just sell resident daily passes, we have to sell
non-resident
based on our outside grant. So
put
that out there.
Agreed, and we will, and I think that's, I hear you on that. But going back to the contact tracing is, if we are required by law to do that, then we have to beef up our systems anyway. But I don't believe that's out there yet, because quite frankly, no one's contact tracing when I go to the grocery store. There's no database of me at the grocery store. There's no database of me on your tennis court. There's no database of me at your linear park. So we have to figure out where we're drawing the line.
No, we just thought because we had season passes, that would be a nice feature to add into there.
Of course, yes. It's a nice feature to add, but I wouldn't fall on that argument for why we wouldn't sell day passes.
I have a few things to add. So
I think we should go back to what we've been talking about the past few weeks is, you know, how to limit non-residents and the fact that if other beaches around us are closed, we do not want to become a destination for everybody else. That's going to lead to more problems. So, you know, nothing's ideal, obviously. You know, this is not an ideal. We're not trying to turn away any residents, but no situation we come up with, no plan, is going to be ideal. So
right.
The fact that the staff that you put this together, that you're willing to even entertain this, you know, I think we should appreciate, because this is not going to be an easy endeavor. If we sell day passes on that day, it's going to be more staff time. It's going to be confusing. If you want another option, like you said, maybe when you sell passes, you sell a few day passes to residents, but you only sell them for season, and they could use them during season. Maybe that is a compromise. But I think we need to remember that if we're going to have that limited number on the beach, we don't want to encourage non-residents with the option of the day pass.
Right, because theoretically we could put our marketing to include season pass access only, so when people are driving up from other, from wherever, they would see that they have to have season pass to come in. If we can't market that, if we allow 50 daily passes, that would encourage people to come down, but maybe there wouldn't be any passes available. So that's one issue too.
Also, on parking, are we going to continue parking restrictions, or are we going to open that up? On parking restrictions.
We could open the parking up. As soon as we open the beach, we would have to open the parking up around the beach, and there's no restrictions for resident and non-residents. Based on the Odd-Lite grant, we don't restrict that.
Yeah, I think, Stephanie, you brought up an excellent point there. I do think that we need to probably be consistent with the other beaches. I don't think it's wise of us to have the only beach in a 20-mile radius that's open. And so I do think that, because Stephanie, you bring up an excellent point, like if we're the only one open, we're going to have a problem. I would think about how that works out.
So, Michael, what you're saying is if everybody else closes their beach, you would be prepared to fence off our beach for the summer? Because that's what it would mean. Because there's, we can't just say we're not opening.
Yeah.
And we have to literally fence off so no one could have access at all summer.
I mean, I have to understand why we think we're different than Highland Park, Wilmette, Winnetka, and all those other beaches out there. Like, what are we doing that's different? If they're fenced off for a reason, I'd like to understand what that reason is. I don't know enough about it, Lisa, to make that decision, but I do think that needs to factor in because you will have people sneaking down, you will have people getting in, you'll have friends letting friends in. You know, unless you're prepared to man it pretty heavily. But can you explain to me a reason why you think that Highland Park or Winnetka or Wilmette will close their beaches and we'll keep ours open?
I believe just because they don't want to issue, I guess, season passes. I mean, would you say that's it? We've always been the assumption that Glencoe Beach is a treasured asset to come to the community. So we were looking at ways to make sure that our residents still had access to the beach once we wanted it. So that has been our main objective. I don't know what the objective of Allen Park is. I don't know what the objective of Will Center or that is, but I've always been told that Glencoe Beach is a treasured asset. Everything we can to keep open. For our residents to do that.
I totally agree. So what happens if you sell 600 season passes and you got 600 people showing up on the 95 degree day?
So
what are we gonna do?
So when your solution is don't open it at all, no one has access at all. Our solution is there may be a handful of days that we have to turn people away for a couple hours, but they have access
85% of the time, so that we feel that access is better than no access at all. Okay, I agree, but that's not what I'm saying, Lisa. I don't appreciate you actually saying what I prefer. What I'm saying is I'd like to understand why the other beach is closed if there's a reason out there that we should be thinking about. But I do think that, like, these are really circular arguments that are going on. If we sell too many passes and we can only have 325, well, that's great. Our residents can access, but we can't have log jams. They can't wait for a few minutes because there's too much social distancing that puts our employees at too much of a risk. And then, you know,
lifeguards. I have weekly conversations with all the superintendents from the North Shore. I just went on a Friday. It all has to do with if their boards decide they're comfortable with having lifeguards or not having lifeguards.
And that's the discussion we still need to have.
Yeah.
And you know that right now the beaches are open, the necklaces are open, the masks are going under the same.
They do not want to close.
The premise is awesome. They have park advantage, masters, and well masks, and that's still open. Highland Park just painted, they open their group beaches with a faster. We're just saying as it gets warmer, it's going to be harder to control with those masks.
Yeah, I know.
But you're doing everything in their power to keep their beaches open, and that's what we're trying to do, is come up with creative solutions to do that and still manage
to pan out. My question is, let's say we open and it's a disaster. I think that goes back to the question of if we, you know, have the passes and phases. I think that's kind of maybe what people were getting at is, you know, what is the plan if it's a disaster and we have to close? I mean, we can refund, we can prorate. You know, what's been the discussion on that scenario?
So, do you think we can manage it with the beach pass system? Again, you guys just think we can't manage this with the beach pass system?
So it's going to be staff intensive. So one of the discussions we're having is that cashiers are purely going to process. They're going to have no discussion with the attendees. We're going to need additional staff up at the top before you go down to the halfway house, selecting people without passes, having those difficult conversations. Those are going to need to be more experienced staff members. They may be full-time staff members. They may be management. So we know that this is not going to be, I'm not going to say cheap, but this is a significant undertaking if we are going to do it. That's what's going to need to take to do it successfully. We know this is going to be extremely challenging,
yeah.
But we think we can do it.
Yeah, I'd like to see some more options out there, though. I'd like to see, because I see things like on 80-degree days being very different than 60-degree days. I see things as Saturdays and Sundays being very different than Monday through Friday. I am really struggling with, and I'm picturing a world here just for the sake of argument, that every beach is open, and so not that we're the only one, but I think it's, I'd like to see some scenario planning and some options out there. Option one, you know, 80 degrees or above, it's season pass holders. 70 degrees below, it's, you know, something like that, Saturdays and Sundays, because I think closing off the beach to our residents who don't buy season pass holders and penalizing those that maybe can't afford a season pass holder, or can't afford a season pass, or it's not in their interest right now to spend $500 to go to the beach once for a family of four, that to me is a very hard thing to swallow. So I'd like to have you guys be creative about some options out there.
Leslie, did you have anything you wanted to say about the pass-only summer option?
It's a difficult situation. We have to both realize that. I'm concerned about having too many people on the beach, and whatever we do, we definitely need to have a cap on that. And I think the cap needs to be relatively low. We might explore some options perhaps for different mixes of using the beach in non-peak periods, maybe during the week, something like that. But I'm very concerned about having too many people on the beach, especially because we need to keep people out of the water. That's my biggest concern, is not so much people on the beach, it's that magnetic, my grandchildren go there, they charge off to the water, and I'm very concerned about that. So it is going to be, if we implement, no matter what we implement, it's going to be very staff intensive and difficult to manage. On the other hand, I'm not excited about closing the beach off to everyone, and I think a reasonable compromise is just for the beach pass holders. But if we can come up with another solution, I'll look at it. But that's where I am right now.
Yeah. Stephanie, is that how you think about it, approximately?
The only compromise I see is selling the day passes with the season passes before the beach opens to residents.
You have to sell to non-residents also. Say we do for residents, we can charge more for non-residents, but we have to sell for non-residents also, or we'd be in violation of our outlay.
The 2 points of clarification, beach pass for a family of four is $121 for a family of four.
Thank you. I apologize. I thought it was $100 per adult, and then
that's relatively affordable.
Yeah.
We can communicate this through our communication plan, which we need to develop once we get the direction. Is right. Residents can apply through family services through our scholarship fund for free beach pass. 90%.
I'm not against pass only. Again, if that's our only option. Raise
too
bad or closing the beach,
it's
not a bad option.
We're really about 10 to 12 days this summer, which are really going to be, I'm not going to say I've never been held, because we're going to have to deal with that. A lot of the times, June tends to be colder. July, August start to get warm, and even the fall, we have to come up with a plan for the fall, but we can't just switch it off after Labor Day.
Also, they get very clear that when they're buying this pass, it may not include water access. So if people have children that want to go in the water and they can't prevent them, they'll know that ahead of time. But we won't be able to spray around either until that mandate is lifted. And you haven't even broached the subject of lifeguard yet, but we're a little concerned about, even if we do get water access, that it will take about 2 to 3 weeks to actually start training our lifeguards, because we cannot start training until that social mandate is lifted. So you either have to prepare not to have lifeguards in the water, which we do before hours in September, or know that we have to keep the water closed even after the mandate is lifted. So one, we can find lifeguards, two, we can train them.
I just want to just add, I know you know this, but when we've decided on the model that we're going to use, we need to engage the village, because they have a wider reach with their emails and their newsletters to really, really promote whatever it is we're doing, so people are not caught with the unexpected. And also that I think keeping the beach open this summer is of special importance, because so many are going to be staying in Glencoe. Their kids may not be going to camp. They may not be going on summer vacation, so we're going to have a larger captive audience and a greater demand for the beach. So it would be especially awful to not keep it open.
Our marketing expertise to make sure with this is communicating to all the residents.
I just want to build on Lisa's last point for my final point, which is, staff, I hope you will be considering that the typical pattern that we see in visitors from past years, in other words, Saturdays and Sundays having the most, might be totally wrong this year, or certainly very different than what we've seen in the past.
You mean the number of beachgoers?
We just might see a lot more, relatively speaking, a lot more people on weekdays than we normally do.
And you've got unemployment issues as well, right? People may not be employed, maybe looking for things to do during the week. Camps may be canceled. I agree that, the demand curve may shift.
Shall we segue now to lifeguard discussion, Lisa? Bobby?
Sure. We have some clarification. I think I need more clarification on the beach thing. So what I can understand, is everybody okay with the plan being presented forward to season pass holders and then guest passes and then possibly sell daily passes before the season, but not, we can't guarantee that they'll get in? I mean,
I really struggle with it. I think on days where you do not have a lot of season pass holders showing up, but the beach has got 20 people on it, to say no to people who want to come at 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I struggle with that a lot. So I'm not on board yet.
Josh?
I think given how affordable season passes are, that's the best way to manage the COVID risks this summer. I do think it would be wise to see if we could sell passes, not season passes, but sell tickets, for lack of a better word, ahead of time. You know, maybe those could be only available on weekdays. I'd leave it to staff to figure it out, but I'm sympathetic to not wanting to do credit card transactions at the beach on the fly. But if you can sell somebody, you know, 5 visits on June 1st that they can use any time over the summer, then you know who they are. And theoretically, you know, software willing, you could limit that to Monday through Friday or something.
Dudley?
I'm pretty good with the staff recommendation.
Okay, Stephanie?
Good passes.
Okay. Steph?
Yeah, I definitely agree that it's just too hard to do a day of. We already are, you know, going to have a lot of staffing requirements at the beach. We're offering it to residents. It is a reasonable cost. I think if we could come up with that option that we've discussed with offering tickets beforehand, but I completely understand why it's just too difficult to do day of at the beach.
Okay, and I guess I will weigh in with the majority, with the caveat that that the staff will at least explore the potential for midweek, you know, passes. But I don't want to water down the value of the season pass by kind of suggesting there's another way you can do it. I think we really have to commit to it or not, because otherwise it loses some of its value. So with that, Lisa, could you help us discuss lifeguards?
Okay, so right now we have kind of a dilemma with our lifeguard situation. We know lifeguards are gonna have a hard time doing rescues this year. Number one is that we can't provide PPEs when they're doing a water rescue. Can't have a mask on, any kind of mask on, or two gloves. They're going in the water, they have something the kids could grab on or adults could grab on, and just be a safety issue for them. When you do water rescue, you're pretty much, your face is right next to your victim's face, so it would be more difficult to do that. When they brought them up, thank you, Bobby, when they brought them up onto shore, when they start doing life-saving measures, whether it be CPR or whatever, we do have a bag that we put on the victim, but their face, again, is really close to the victim's mouth if they end up throwing up or finding fluids that would get on staff or in life with them wearing swimsuits. There's no way they can put all the PPE on that, say, a doctor or a paramedic dog. So it's really exposing our staff to COVID-19 at this time. We also can't begin training lifeguards until the stay-in-place order. I mean, by this time, you've already started that, or will soon. I don't know what that perhaps you started lifeguard training next week.
Sure.
Yeah, we start next week, but we won't be able to. We can't have lifeguard training when we can't have staff 6 feet next to each other. So we won't be able to get to start training staff until the stay-in-place order lifts, so we know that's not the minimum May 31st. It would be
really difficult to get lifeguards on the chair immediately whenever the water restriction is lifted, for example. So then what I'm asking you is that would you be okay with, number one, not having lifeguards on the chair? It would be a swimming your own risk. We would pose like we do when we're not open to the public, because obviously the beach water is accessible when we're not open to have lifeguards up. We have a great message that we put up, or we post everywhere, that no lifeguards on duty, swim your own risk. We would look to make the water swimming area shallower, maybe longer. We would put those measures in place. So I guess I want to know what your attitude to not get lifeguards on the chair when the water is able to have swimming again on the beach.
Are you able to have a lifeguard on the chair that calls 911? Or that sends a confusing message because people are going to say, why isn't the lifeguard going to walk?
Absolutely sends a bad message. That's something that would not to say we wouldn't have. So, for example, I'm going to give you an example. When you go to Michigan State Parks, you come in, you pay your fee to go into the park, but they have no lifeguards up in the chair. They have signs that say no lifeguards on duty. They have buoys, but they have a park ranger that goes up and down the beach. And if they see something, they might call 911, but they're not even trusted with food because they have the park ranger out there. So we would obviously have beach attendants on there, maybe watching, making sure, telling kids not to throw rocks and stuff, but they might not even trust with swimsuits. They might be shorts and a polo, so that would be that looks different than a lifeguard. So we'd have people on the beach, but there would not be the expectation of them to be life-saving skills.
Lisa, are there any insurance issues with not having lifeguards?
Well, obviously, ideally, Federma would like us to, but we have always operated, I don't know how long it's been going back, at least 25, 30, 40, maybe forever since we've been in the park district. At before 10 o'clock, people are allowed to swim on the beach. We post no lifeguard signs. After 7 o'clock, previously, we pack up, we leave, there's people on the beach, people are swimming. And then after the season's over, before Memorial Day and after Labor Day, people have always swam. And so we would not have any additional liability based on.
Okay, thank you for that. That's good.
No problem. Do you have anything to add on this one?
I don't think so. The signage, we would have to have significant signage saying that there is no lifeguards on duty.
Which we do on the chairs, and when we sell the seats to passes, we make it very clear that we have no lifeguards available to see them.
By the way, are we going to extend early bird season passes once we've locked down exactly what it is you're getting with the season pass?
We already extended it to June 1st already.
We posted it today.
Okay. So, let me tell you, it's not ideal. It's not something that we're all thrilled to be doing at all, but we're also not thrilled to put our staff in danger. And to be honest, that threat may last throughout the whole summer, so that's why we'll be very clear that we'll have no lifeguards available this summer. And if by some chance something happens, changes in the environment, then we would exceed people's expectations to put guards up on the chair.
Yeah, and I think we're going to be pretty much in line with, other institutions. I know I've talked to several camps. This is an issue for them as well. So it's not, we're not going to stand out here. It's going to be kind of how it is. I know that camps are struggling, saying they probably won't have lessons because, for the same reason, they can't be that close. So,
that's a very real thing. That's why you probably won't see a
lot.
Right.
I don't see how you can have lifeguards if the prevalence of COVID is reasonably high in the community and you have no cure or no effective treatment. I don't struggle very much with whether we should have lifeguards, but I do struggle. I'm struggling with whether we should allow people to swim. In my imagination, I feel like if it's
you know, if there aren't very many people there and it's a calm day, what's the big deal about, you know, a couple of people swimming here and there? I think that's kind of the scenario we have in mind early in the morning or, you know, in the fall. But I do worry about a wavy day with 350 people there.
Yeah. Josh, would an option be that we simply have, you know, more beach closures? Because I know we do that during the summer anyway. Bobby, you can speak to that, the riptide situation and so forth, that we might, you know, expand the reasons for no swimming so that people aren't required to make those decisions for themselves.
We use our flag system, and Bobby, can you explain what that is?
Yeah, so we do that already for sailing and for swimming, is that we dictate what the conditions are and that people know ahead of time before they come to the beach. So we would be probably more prudent in monitoring the water situation and the swimming conditions, letting people know, and closing the water. So we may close the water even if somebody says, well, no lifeguards, we still may close the water and have a life. At the lifeguard manager walking up and down all day, stopping people going into the water. So we still would dictate that we can control access to the water.
Again, communication, extra signage, much as we can tell people so that they're prepared for what this is.
Yeah. So far, I actually agree with everybody here, which is good. But I do have a data question for you, Matt. Actually, I think Matt, you may know this. What has in 2019? How often did you have lifeguards that had to do something like mouth to mouth?
Only on mannequins.
So only on what?
Mannequins.
So
okay. So
we did not have an active rescue during 2019.
So I think we could just use that as a data point. I fully agree with Lisa Brooks that if there are days of even remote heightened wave activity or heightened risk, you kind of act smart. But it sounds to me like our beach is closed off enough where you can't really, I know there's one area you can kind of go a little bit far out. Bringing that in would mitigate some of the risk that we have. So I am perfectly fine with no lifeguards. I do think without lifeguards, you need to bring that area. There's that sandbar out there. I call it Covey Island. I probably wouldn't go past Covey Island, and I would just use every precaution. But I for one, am perfectly fine with a swim at your own risk, as long as our insurance company is, and as long as you, Matt, I'm mostly concerned about you. You're down there all the time, making sure you're comfortable with it too.
So long as we were given the opportunity to close the water on high surf days, that would be my main concern. People understand that there are currents in Lake Michigan, and there are lateral currents, we have pure structural currents, and we have the sandbar is almost non-existent due to where the water levels are at now. All right.
Covey Island gone.
We would love to also swim area for what set the memo to.
Right.
Sure. Width-wise, narrow, make it narrower and make it longer if possible.
Yeah.
So you have to trade off making it smaller because then that concentrates more people in a small area.
So they make it longer, though.
Yeah, they need it longer. The shoreline would be longer. It would be shorter depth-wise.
We won't have any boats going out, sadly, so we can make the beach longer, right? There'll be no boats on the swimming beach.
Yeah.
No boats in the swimming
room. There's room for both. Like the line ends pretty. There's probably a good 50 feet between the pier and where the swimming area ends. You can extend it out. But I think, from my perspective, no lifeguard is perfectly fine.
Anyone have objections to no lifeguard? Okay.
I don't like it. I just don't think we have a choice.
Well, not ideal, but what makes me feel a little better is that we're never closed, really. In prior years, and we've talked about this before, so it's always an inherent risk because when we're not staffed, people can go down there and something can happen. So, I mean, it's not great since we're open and staffed and still can't provide that, but...
Yeah, definitely, I totally agree with you. I just, to me, it feels like there's a larger risk when you've got 300 people there than you've got six. And there's also not so much a legal liability concern, but just the, like, I feel bad as a human being if Matt's got employees there and somebody, you know, God forbid somebody drowns, that maybe we would have been able to save if we had had a lifeguard on a chair. That's what I worry about.
So what Lisa was alluding to earlier with the beaches in Michigan, you could set up the station, the station with the rotary.
You have to do that.
Required you to do like that. So we'll have some type of an option there for people that are on the beach, and if there's an active drowning, you can supply that equipment so they have a chance.
They have to have a throw ring, they have to have a bone accessible. There's specific requirements you have to have for unguarded.
Hey, is there an option to have lifeguards that is mouth to mouth the biggest risk that we have, or is it actually touching people is the big risk? I'm trying to figure out, is there a possibility to have a lifeguard to say, look, no mouth to mouth, but we'll do whatever else we can, or like you were talking about earlier, Stephanie?
You still have the risk of taking them out of water, so when you're in the water, you're dragging them out. You're very close contact with them. So mouth to mouth is okay. So, certain could be as a bag for that, so you don't have to be mouth to mouth, but it's any kind of, you're close contact, you're seeing if they're breathing, you're close to them. You know, they grow up on you, they're close to them, so.
Okay.
Yeah, if we're able to do the restrictions left, we would revisit them.
I'm okay with what, I think I end up agreeing with Josh then. Not ideal, but I still think it's an adequate solution.
That's what we all agree.
Okay. All right, and I agree too, and I have to say, when you go to the beach in the summer and you see how happy the water makes kids, even if it's freezing cold, they just like to go in it and they're close to the shoreline, you know, but it just, to think that we're, that this is a summer where people are going to be living with so many restrictions to the things they like to do to enjoy themselves and have fun. I like that we can at least offer this, you know, as something for, you know, recreation. So, you know, lifeguards, no lifeguards is not optimal, but it's doable. Okay, so if nothing else on the beach and boating, we will move to a discussion on options to open park amenities such as tennis and disc golf, and this is Lisa Shepherd and Chris Liner.
Okay, so we've been getting a lot of feedback about the ability to open tennis and disc golf in particular. The one comment about basketball, and we're not requesting any consideration on opening the basketball courts at this time. For those tend to be a good day, but there's really close contact with that. So the first one is disc golf. So obviously the governor opened up regular golf, which led to a lot of conversations about this. And staff believe there's a possibility to open up disc golf with some parameters, such as posting signs that say no more than two people in a group, using hand sanitizer as you take your disc out of the basket, things like that we could possibly reopen those at that amenity. The biggest thing you have to know, though, is that the reason we closed it was because we were having a lot of group activities, like group play. So, and group play by people that probably aren't in the same household prior to this happening. So regardless of the signs we put up, people still, you know, with both the teenage groups, college groups, graduating groups of 6 to 8 and playing disc golf and not doing the social mandate. So if we open this up, there probably would be more of a chance that would reoccur. We would hope that people would follow the guidelines. And what we would have to do is go back to the park ambassadors making rounds, making sure, and then public safety. And if it became a burden, if people weren't obeying the social mandate requirements, there's probably we'd have to close it back up. So we wanted to see if you would like to keep those amenities closed or take the chance of opening up with signage and the ability to play this golf.
Anyone? What do you think about it, Steph?
Well, I don't know much about disc golf, so I'm not the best person, but I know that teenagers, you know, those are the people that every community is having an issue with. So it's a tough call. I know that that's the group that people complain about, it's the groups that people call about. We are gonna have to field that those calls, because for every person that wants it, there's a person that doesn't want it. And there's a person that will call and complain and say, why are you letting this happen? So, but on the other side is what we're struggling with is we want people to be healthy. You want them to go out there. This is low risk or lower risk than most things. So I would be for giving people a chance, letting it happen, and using an ambassador to patrol and see how it goes.
What she said. Exactly. Okay, Michael? Maybe not.
I'm fine with what Stephanie said, minus the ambassador as well.
Okay, Dudley?
Okay, now we may have an ambassador over there anyway to help with the tennis. We haven't gotten to that issue yet, but I guess I'm willing to give it a try, but we have to also be willing to pull the plug on it if people are congregating, and we'll, you know, see how that goes. But perhaps if we already have an ambassador outside dealing with the tennis, which is the next item, we'll have somebody physically there to help maintain distance.
Well, I don't really picture someone sitting there all day long, but touring through the property.
Sure, from time to time.
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay. All right. Sorry, Josh. Do you have anything to add?
Yeah, I guess I'm going to go in the other direction. I'm pretty skeptical. We had to close it because people were violating the rules. I live close to that park. I've played disc golf there myself. I would point out that it's almost always, you know, groups of at least four and sometimes six or eight people who are generally not in the same household. And although it's possible that people would change their behavior and golf in groups of two who are part of the same household, I don't see that happening, and I think we're opening up a can of worms by restarting. Sorry.
I don't disagree with you, Josh, but it just makes me too sad to agree with you, so I won't.
Well, I think you can also look at it as kind of like a soft opening, kind of like how we did with the daycare. I mean, that's for obviously a much better reason to provide care for essential workers, so I can't really compare the two, but, you know, at some point we have to move forward. Maybe this is a good baby step to see how it goes. It's not going to be 300 people. It's not going to be 100. It's going to be less people than the beach, you know.
Yeah, but you're going to have 300 people sticking their hands in the goals.
Well, is it their own supply for the disc golf, or is it ours?
Their
it's
own really discs. Does it make sense to cover the basket? Like, cover it, and you know if you're just landed in it, if you got in, if it didn't.
That would just be like throwing a frisbee at a tree.
Yeah.
Thanks, Chris.
You know, we've done bags on the baskets before when we have special events. They don't typically last in the park more than 2 days.
Oh, yeah.
Between
yeah.
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 Yeah, of course. Right.
I mean, we could wait.
Can we make this an experiment? This is an experiment, and we should be prepared to pull the plug if it's not being used properly.
And we could wait until May 31st to actually open them back up and to tell us that.
shelter in place would be changed a little by then, and then we could bring that, the weather will be nicer, and we could open them up again.
Yeah, I like the idea of a test. I like the idea of, you know, if we're concerned about groups of four or five kids congregating, you know, that's one thing. If you're concerned about the touching of the basket, I think we can tell people you have to bring wipes and wipe off the basket, almost like you do at a gym when you're off the equipment. Almost like you see at the supermarket where you see everyone, you know, you grab the handle of the supermarket cart, but there's wipes there. I don't think we have to provide the wipes, but I think we can just say, please make sure to wipe down the equipment before someone else touches it, and that's, you know, I think that's good enough. I like the idea of a test. I like the idea of saying we're temporarily opening it. Please don't abuse it. Wipe it off.
Good luck with that.
I think it's similar to playgrounds. We just wait for playgrounds. The playgrounds have the same issue, is that people touch the playgrounds. That's why they're not open later.
Yeah, but I'd also put it out there that I live near plenty of playgrounds. The Central School one is not closed off. I see kids on it every day, and I still see the number of COVID cases in Glencoe is like 10. It's low.
It's actually 23.
According to the Chicago Tribune, it's low. That may be off, but I think we can give benefit of the doubt a little bit and see how it goes.
Well, we have risen to 23, so we have gone up in the last week.
Is that cumulative, or is that?
I don't know. Current? I checked the Tribune today, and it said that. So
I thought it was cumulative.
Still in Glencoe, and we've had six new cases. So, I do think disc golf are going to get less people than a playground. So, I think it's safer than a playground, and they're not touching as much, and you can distance more because the goals are spread out. I'm more comfortable with disc golf than a playground, obviously. But
yeah, I am as well, and I think also the congregating at a playground is a lot more, and you stay there in that one sort of spot. And disc golf, you're moving around. I've played at that course before, but I think if the concern is about the touching at the thing, I think we can mitigate that.
Okay, so my hearing open disc golf. It wouldn't be immediately. We have to develop signage for the rules that I outlined in the memo. So it would probably be a bad weather for the next 10 days. So we probably wouldn't see until the end of that period anyways, and we get it up and running. So we'll look for it probably by the 22nd or something like that. Does that sound fair?
Can you just share how many emails you've received on this topic?
Not a lot. It's more on Nextdoor app and things like that. So there's not a lot of emails. I probably 8 to 10.
I think the demographic that plays disc golf is unlikely to be sending the executive director an email. You know what I mean? They're like, you know. So,
hey, I play disc golf.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so is that the direction you guys are going to be?
Yeah. Yes. Right. Yes. Good.
Okay. Fun to tennis, which is, this seems to be more of a fun topic. The United States Tennis Association, they put on their website some recommendations, and they believe that tennis can be safe with certain modifications. You bring your own equipment, you bring, you number your balls, you have different, each player has different, only play singles, things like that. Remove nets, if there's three courts, remove the middle net. Only have one net available for play. So we believe that there's ways to modify for tennis to make it safe for people to play. They just use their own personal discretion. I don't think that the reason we ever closed the tennis courts, though, in my opinion, was because of tennis players. It was more of the fact that people were using the tennis courts for other reasons, like dog park, hockey, soccer, and those activities were encouraging. Not encouraging social distancing. So that's my biggest concern with tennis, it had nothing to do with tennis playing, it was the other unauthorized use that I'm afraid if we open the tennis court, the same thing would happen again. So that's my biggest concern with that particular sport. I think tennis itself is great stress relief, it's great exercise, usually, you know,
you're playing with one other person across the net. I think we could make that work. I just don't know how we make it work without some parameters. And what that means is that I think we have to open one tennis court for certain hours, either take reservations or publicize that the tennis court's open from this day to this day, and have someone sit there and pretty much watch what's going on there. So it's an expense that we've never had before by having someone out there to watch the tennis court. So it's kind of like, how I look at it is instead of investing in new infrastructure, we're actually investing in our infrastructure for people to use it. So we have the staff, the safer staff, to sit out there to make sure they're using it properly, and so that people can use what our men need this summer. So just wanted to know what your thoughts are on that.
Lisa, let me ask you this. Is it incremental cost to us, or is it a cost that we're already paying because we're paying these staff members at, like, Children's Circle or something else?
Yes and no. It kind of depends. Well, if we end up doing camp for Children's Circle or we go for the beach, it may be additional cost. Right now, the same staff till May 31st, so we'd probably be using our existing staff that we already have to be out there. After June 1st, I couldn't tell you or not, it might be additional cost. Once the bans are lessened, obviously we would not have staff there anymore. We just open all the tests for it. So I don't know how long this would last. It could last 2 months or two.
Yeah.
And then social restrictions are lifted. So I couldn't tell you for sure how long it would last on the cost.
Yeah, I mean, if we're so closed down that camps are closed, you can certainly use some of those staff to police the tennis courts, but you're right, if camps are open, the tennis courts are likely to be open anyway. My take on it is I think you're right that the reason why you probably close down the tennis courts is not because of the tennis players, it's because of the other activities. So I like the idea of opening up tennis courts for tennis and monitoring that as long as the cost is either minimal or maybe offset with a reservation fee. I think that's something to work. Would you just have like every other court being used? If there's two courts adjacent? Yeah.
We would probably choose one tennis court because then we could also add protection of having someone there sometimes for this golf and not all of
these. Yeah, okay.
I'm kind of struggling with the epidemiology of this because...
I thought you were an epidemiologist, Josh.
Yeah, well, forgive me for even pretending, but I understand people who are living together playing tennis, but if you're sweating and holding on to the same three balls that you're hitting back and forth, like, you may be 80 feet apart, but I just don't see how that's a good idea.
Well, if you read, like, through the USDA's, which I included in the memo, they have ideas such as numbering your ball. So one of the players has ball, one, and the other one has two, and you never touch one. You only touch your ball, not the other person's ball. That's what they're recommending.
That's baloney.
Okay.
If you read through the options, like you said, there's certain limitations and rules in there, and I know. People are going to take their own precautions as well, They might bring a whole basket of balls because they don't want to touch each other. So, I think that some of that you have to leave to the person. But again, if you're going to allow disc golf, you can't make the argument to not allow tennis, which is less people and they're farther apart. So I think we have to be consistent. We're going to do one, kind of got to do the other because it seems very inconsistent though.
I don't think we should do either, I guess. But that was the other discussion.
I guess I would say I'm in favor of opening them, but being tolerant of what's going to happen if we have to pull the plug because people are not being compliant. But no matter what scenario you come up with, everything requires compliance by the users. And if they're compliant and they're using it as they should, we're good. And if they're not, we're not a police force.
and public safety doesn't want to deal with multiple calls a day about people who are misbehaving on the tennis courts. I know that. So, you know, I think, again, we do it, and we hope that people use it in the spirit that it's meant to be used, and we deal with it if they don't.
I think limiting the location will help that. I like the location you chose. You obviously did that for various reasons, but it makes sense. You know, that's not, hopefully not an area that I've seen as much people using it as a dog park or using it for other things like their toy cars. I don't know if that's true or not. I don't drive by there all the time. So it's still a risk, but at least you're not, you know, you're limiting the risk to one area. And like you said, if you have someone patrolling, you get the benefit of disc golf being over there as well. So your thought process makes a lot of sense.
I'd like to add something.
Dudley.
Lisa, in your staff report, you suggested you could physically lock up the units when they weren't being used. You could lock up the courts. I really support that. That way it gives you more control.
That's the way the only way I think it'll work is if we have someone there posted hours and then we lock it up when we're finished.
Yeah, I support that.
What? We could not play Lakefront. It would be locked. The Lakefront can't be locked. So we would just take one tennis court. If it, we could just see if there's enough, like we just post the hours and then just people come and sign up when they want to play. If it gets too cumbersome, then we could take reservations for it. We could work out those details with that. But I would not do it if there's not someone monitoring it because it's going to be, we're going to get so many complaints and I'll be closing it a week later and then we'll get the arguments on you open it, you close it, and there's inconsistency in how we're doing it. So that's the only way I would recommend that for the game parking after there.
Yeah.
Does that sound good?
Sounds good.
Okay.
So you'll present us with a more specific plan that incorporates the direction we've given you tonight.
Yeah.
Okay.
And March, we have a string of bad weather, so we had time to roll it out, so we'll do that.
Yeah, I know it's not like you don't have anything else to do, because I know you guys are working awfully hard. Okay, so that concludes that discussion, and we will move on to other business. Lisa Shepherd, will you lead a discussion on special events that are co-sponsored with the village and
what? Skip one.
Oops. What was that, Dudley?
We're going to have a
special committee meeting.
I just need to schedule, we're going to schedule a special committee meeting for next Tuesday at 7 p.m. Does that work for everybody?
Yes.
Let me check my very busy agenda calendar. Hold on. I'm supposed to be in Miami.
Oh, really?
I'm not going, but I'm supposed to be there, yeah.
Oh, no.
Okay, yeah, you can zoom in.
It's good. Yep.
We're good.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Okay, so someone just asked on the chat, we're going to have staff member at Tennis Court, why can't we open more courts? Because I think it would be expense for staff to be at multiple courts, so we can try with one court first and move on from there. Okay, so now the Recreation Park District and Village co-sponsored special event. So the Village and the Park District is in constant communication. And I you can't get a 911 memo, but really the recommendations are moving forward for the summer. These are just the co-sponsored ones, and we'll talk about our park district individual special events at a different time. But we're recommending canceling movies to the green. There's three different scenarios that we'll cancel for at Wine and Green. We are looking at the possibility of making it a drive-in movie, but we don't have those details for now, so we'll look at that. We're recommending canceling 4th of July celebrations in the form they were last year. Pretty much every community around us is canceling 4th of July because there's no possible way to social distancing. Staff is looking at some creative options for virtual programming or lawn decorating and things like that. Make it a little bit fun that day. So shape the way that it works now. We cancel it. We will be able to use our deposits with fireworks that we already made towards next year's fireworks. So that's good news. We don't lose that money. That was great. Meet the machines we would cancel also. That's just like a touch of trust type of special event. There's no way that would happen. And then some of the village ones, I just wanted to inform you, like Glencoe Festival of Arts could be rescheduled. The sidewalk sale, farmers market, all those French market will all be canceled, unfortunately. So that's our recommendation for moving forward on those large special events. Much to my chagrin.
Can we have to make that call now?
Yes, we do. Planning, we have to fireworks company, we have to cancel it. Or we lose a lot of money, so yeah. Like I said, pretty much every community around us is making that decision. They have made it official.
Yep.
Yeah, but it seems to be the, unfortunately, the calls.
That seems important, Lisa.
Okay. All right, that's all I have tonight.
Look at that. And does anyone have anything else that they didn't have an opportunity to share or discuss or question?
Any board member or public?
Board member.
I just wanted to ask how the first couple days went with the daycare.
Yeah.
Oh, it went great. Steph is doing a fantastic job. And actually, we had one of the parents call and ask if they could drop their child off earlier today because their children really wanted to go and they really missed being there. And very little crying. We were crying. Because they have been out of it for so long that they were happy to be back. So it's cross opening with a small number. We're increasing the advertising to the general medical community right now. So we'll see those numbers come up. But doing very well.
I just have a quick question. Oh,
no, sorry, just a huge congratulations to you guys. That's awesome. I love the fact that we're doing this. And I can't imagine the amount of work that's going into it. These are kind of the conversations I'd much rather have than we open up a tennis court. These are the things that matter. So.
I had three people call me today from outsider community that knew we were open and asked us how it's going. So you're really being, looked at as a model and a guide. So that's really great.
Yeah, we're really getting paid for the part of this report, like I said, it's how it's going to, campus is going to unveil. So yeah, we're doing very well. We have an amazing early childhood team, so they have it under control.
All true, nothing else. Yes, and I will say, Lisa, I don't know if people are, when I see daycare, I think 0 to 5. Is your messaging getting through to people who have school-age children? And might not connect to the word daycare. Because I think there could be a whole demographic of people who do not have very young children and are thinking daycare is not for them. That's my only thought. And I read through the material again and still had that question. So, Bobby.
See that change to be more clear. Thank you. Yeah, you're right.
We'll make that change.
We want to put the age on there. We didn't do that. Probably just out of this habit, calling it daycare. We will definitely make that change.
The daycare, childcare, exactly. Okay, if that's it, I entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Josh. Thanks, everyone.